Welcome to Sons of the Flag Radio, brought to you by Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. We start off each show by honoring our brothers and sisters that we've lost since our last show. Michael Malinowski, George Childs, Robert White Jr., Kenneth Jones, Michael Cardendale Sr., Otis Isaacs Jr., Charles McCormick, John Bresnan, David Hill, Mark Horwich, Daryl Druche, Roger DeLongchamp, Timothy Smith, John Cash, Corbin Rogers, Manuel Galindo Jr. May we take a moment of silence to honor them. On our last episode, we had conversations with our original Sons of the Flag Task Force member, Lieutenant Greg Turnell of the Washington, D.C. Fire Department. If you would like to listen to this episode or any other episode, then log on to Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio and look up Sons of the Flag. Be sure to look up and follow Sons of the Flag on all social media by typing in @SonsOfTheFlag. You can also log on to our website at www.sonsoftheflag.org. for more information about who we are and any of our upcoming events. Additionally, through the end of the year, we are running an H1 Hummer sweepstakes that has been customized by Rad Rides, and you can join the sweepstakes by logging on to www.sonsoftheflag.org/Hummer. $20 will get you registered for one chance to win, or $100 for six chances to win, with all proceeds going to Sons of the Flag. A special thank you goes out to Ryan Appleman for donating the H1 Hummer for the sweepstakes. On tonight's episode, we sit down with special guest Brendan Donut McDonough, who is a member of the Granite Mountain Hotshots. On June 30th, 2013, while McDonough, or Donut as he's been dubbed by his crew, served as lookout, they confronted a freak 3,000-degree inferno in nearby Yarnell, Arizona. The relentless firestorm ultimately trapped his hotshot brothers, tragically killing all 19 of them within minutes. Nationwide, it was the greatest loss of firefighter lives since the 9/11 attacks. I will now turn this conversation over to our National Task Force Director, Chad Gruber.
Thank you for listening to Sons of the Flag Radio. We're here in Portland today, and this morning we just finished the first morning of the Firemanship Conference and listened to some great speakers. I'm sitting in the room with me right now is Brendan McDonough from the Granite Mountain Hotshots and Devin Barnhart from the Colorado Fort Collins Fire Department, Task Force member of Sons of the Flag. So we listened to it. Guys, y'all both did great job speaking today. So much good stuff came out. Brendan, welcome.
Thanks, Will. I appreciate it. It was just a huge eye-opener to sit in this conference today, and been speaking at a few of them for quite a few years now, and we're seeing this cultural shift within mental health that's becoming such a huge topic, but also still one of those silent killers, unfortunately. But it's so encouraging to know that there's people out there that are willing to listen and just kind of hear personal stories like Devin and I, mine, just to be able to share with them the struggles we've been through and really just give them an insight of, hey, there is a way and there is hope. And so it's just been a huge honor to be a part of this day one opener.
Absolutely. For those of y'all that don't know, Donut, I'm going to call him that for the rest of the day because it's easier for me. I'll mess up and call him Brandon by accident. But Donut was the lone survivor of the Granite Mountain Hotshots in the Yarnell fire, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That was in 2013.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Okay. Devin, welcome. We've heard your story before. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Truly an honor. Very excited to be with Sons of the Flag and look forward to our future. Actually, I never met Donut before today, so good to meet you.
Yeah,
likewise, and brother. I'd have to say he's on point. Just from the little bit that I heard, I came in a little late this morning from Denver, but talking about the dark side of the job, I guess we'll say,
yeah,
and life itself, but people are recognizing that we need to focus on our mental health in order to be truly healthy and help cut down on those numbers. I mean, I don't know what the actual numbers are, but we have roughly 100 LODDs a year through fire fatalities or cardiac events or whatever you may call it. But then we're losing close to 300 a year due to suicide with EMS and first responders. And that's just crazy. We need to raise more awareness on that.
And just real briefly, for those that don't know Devin, as a civilian, he was 23 years old, and he was burnt 70% of his body and lost
three
good friends to that fire. And through his rehab and through everything, somehow managed to become a firefighter. So he has overcome a little bit of adversity in his life. And, you know, and when we thought about doing this, it was just going to be Donut and I. And then as I listened to both of their speeches, they said the same things. They were saying the same message. And, you know, this one's not going to deal about burns, but we're going to talk about some mental health. And I'm not the expert on it, but I just wanted to give them a chance to share their story.
Neither are we.
No, but I mean, I'm far from it. You need to go listen to, you know, Dan DeGrice, Chief DeGrice out of Chicago. And there are some guys that are really doing some good. But the thing that got me both, they both felt extreme guilt and asked why are they the ones that survived?
I think that survivor's guilt plays such a huge role in the trauma and PTSD that I suffered from. And so often those who are left to survive are left asking the question, why? Why wasn't it me? Why wasn't I there? Why couldn't someone else have lived? And it takes so much healing and so much work to get to that point of understanding and answering those questions, and then coming to just the acceptance of I may not have those answers while I'm on this earth. And it was probably one of the biggest things that I got hung up with, and the thing that kept me up at night, and just watching my brothers and their families grow without the father, the kids that were impacted by this, the aunts, uncles, moms, dads, wives, brothers and sisters, you just see this huge ripple effect that isn't just for that moment or isn't just for the years that people remember it, but for the rest of their life. And just the other day, I seen one of the sons did a video kind of on his testimony and where he's at today. And he's in middle school now, and he was talking about his faith in God. And it was just so reassuring to me to know that they're healing as well. You know, and it was just an inspiration to see that this young man is finding what's important, and that's taking care of himself and being a part of his family and remembering his father in such great light of what he sacrificed and what he gave. So you have to continue just to push yourself and not be done. You know, so many times that tragedy for so many is, as I like to say, the finish line, and that's where we start. We don't have to sit in that pain. We don't have to be there forever, but it can be tough. So just to try and find those words of encouragement to give to let people know, like, there's other people that are in this fight with you.
You know, in your book, and this, I mean, when I read your book I was on the plane, and I knew the story. I've seen the movie. And yet I'm still crying because it just hit home, because here you were, and we don't need to go into it. You overcame a lot to just become one of these guys, and this was your only family. And I'm not trying to punch you in the junk here. I really am not. You know, this was your first real, you said in the book, this is your first real family I ever had. You know, Eric was the one that was your father figure.
Yeah, I had so many influential men in my life and guiding me on what it was to be not just a good firefighter, but a good father and a good person in the community. And that put me on a trajectory to change my life completely around from what I was before.
And you said you felt like you owed it to them. Like when you didn't want to go to your house, you wanted to go where the families were. And you've been telling your brother's story for the last 8 years.
Yeah, 7 years. Yeah.
7 years, 7, 8 years now. And that ended up actually, you're doing it and you're being strong for them, but you're killing yourself on the inside.
Yeah. The first handful of speeches I did were take a shot before, calm the nerves, and then drink after to go to sleep, and then it just continued to increase. And the conversations I was having was about self-care, but I wasn't doing it for me. And so it just came to a point in time and place where I needed to walk the walk, you know? And so I started getting in counseling and started getting help and started seeing the value of dealing with these issues. And then the relief that came, I'd go to a few therapy sessions, you know, I'd get a good night rest, good night's sleep. And I'd be like, okay, there's something to this. You know, I'm not the smartest tool in the shed, but I figured out, okay, if I keep going to this therapy thing, EMDR, something positive is going to continue to come out of it. So I did it for 9 months. By the end of it, it was medication free, nightmare free. You know, I've had maybe a panic attack in the last 3 years. Sober 3 years this St. Paddy's Day. So much beauty came out of that tragedy on so many different levels of myself, my family, the other families. And it's just been a ripple effect that, you know, I want to carry forward. That's their legacy, is not only what they changed in my life beforehand, but where I am at today.
Absolutely. Devin?
Holy crap. I have nothing to add. It's really crazy how very similar our stories are. I can repeat everything he just said. That is my story. And like you hit it spot on when you said, you know, you're a motivational speaker, right? You're telling your story, and people that are having a hard time are getting something from it. But you're not okay inside. It's a front. And I completely understand that. I mean, I truly think I'm a happy person right now, but it's taken me a long time to get here. Before that, I just appeared happy. It was easier to smile and laugh and have fun and not worry about it. And then when I'm by myself, drinks on.
Yeah, I think so often for men and women in our career, we put on the badge, we put on our gear, and it's go time. There is an internal switch that is flipped, that fight, flight, or freeze. And in that position, you can do one of three things. And obviously the career we chose to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we, people like ourselves, when we get up on stage, we're fighting. We're fighting for something. And then when we take off, we're running away from our feelings and emotions. And so for me, it was just such a calming piece to where I remember there's one engagement that I just kind of let it go. I let it loose on stage, and I was like, you know, I'm here telling you to do these things, but here I am also suffering. I'm going to go back to my hotel room tonight. I'm going to have a few drinks because I need help getting to sleep. You know, and someone told me, they said, you know, if you want to be who God has destined you to be, then you have to change. You have to continue to evolve. I didn't want to let anybody down. And so it was like, okay, so either I can make a change in my life or let people down. And it was just a crossroads of, at the time, I didn't understand the complexity of how miserable I was in life. I thought I was doing just all right. But once I started getting help, it was tremendously different. And I continued to talk on that. And, you know, day after day, one day at a time, just got, you know, damn near to 3 years coming up pretty soon on sobriety. And so it's just a process that we haven't had enough conversations like this.
Yeah. Same thing. A lot of therapy. EMDR did wonders for me.
What is EMDR?
So it's eye movement desensitization reorganization.
Yeah, something like that.
So basically, okay, you hold a paddle in each hand and they vibrate back and forth.
Okay.
So your left hand will vibrate, your right hand will vibrate. They can change the intensity of the vibration and the rate at which it goes. What they have you do is close your eyes, and they want you to go to a place, either in your present or your past, that you know, are collecting grief from. I realized I had a lot of counseling through the events of my fire. Before I was allowed to leave the burn unit, I had to sign the suicide contract. And I had extensive counseling there to come to terms with what I had been through and that loss and the survivor's guilt. I realized it started to hit me later after I lost my father. I never received any counseling for that. Mm-hmm. So that's where EMDR took me. And when I went into it, I was like, this is bullshit.
What kind of freaking witchcraft is this?
This voodoo is not going to work. But It absolutely did. I went in as a skeptic, and it allowed me to go places like getting sworn in as a firefighter, having my child, getting married. I was allowed to relive those events with my father there. And that let me move past that point in my past and start focusing on my future. Mm-hmm. And kind of going back to the survivor's guilt of things. When you first get out of your incident, we'll call it, there is that, why me? You know, what if I'd done this? What if I'd done that? You live there for a while, and some people get stuck there. I'm sure that Donut and I are very similar in the sense that we were like, okay, I can't live here forever. This is too hard. I got to find something to move me forward from this. For me, it was the memory of my friends. I had such a close connection to them. I was like, what would they want me to do? Like, would they want me to be wallowing in self-pity right now? Or would they want me to go live my life and enjoy it? So that was a big turning point for me, is kind of coming to that understanding. So then I say, okay, I'm going to do it for them. Well, then I figure out I want fire service. Well, now it really is about them. I swore an oath to the citizens. And, you know, I promised to have my best day on their worst, because I've been in that seat. I know what it's like to just let go and hope that the crew that shows up is C shift, station two. But
what shift are you on?
C shift.
Okay.
Yeah. That's station two.
That's
station two.
Yeah. So I made it about them. And then I have a wife and a child, and I try and make it all about them. And I realized I hadn't done anything for myself. I mean, yes, I was accomplishing these goals that I'd set for myself, but I wasn't focusing on my own health. And in turn, that was not doing what's best for them, because I got to keep myself healthy. My kid wants me to stay around for a long time. My wife might, I don't know. I think she does.
Yeah. I think it's so important to come back to that why question. And I feel like I've had some moment of clarity here. In the beginning, we always ask why. Why has this happened? Why not me? But at the end of our journey, in the beginning of healing, we ask ourselves again, why? I think that why is, what's my purpose? What's my why? Why am I here? You know, we have to find the second part to that answer. And that's like Devin was saying, finding the fire service, being a father, and vice versa for me. Being a father was so important, because that's all I had left when the fire service was taken from me, tragically, was to be a dad. I didn't want to screw that up. And so you find yourself looking for purpose, and you start plugging pieces in. And then eventually you come to exactly where you're supposed to be at the right moment. And it seems like, you know, during the time, it's just like, wow, this is forever. But once you get there, you're just blown away. Like, I'm blown away that today I get to run a treatment center for those who suffer from addiction and trauma. I never thought in a million years I'd be there.
Yeah, we're gonna
didn't talk. Know nothing about business, didn't know nothing about psychology, medications, etc. But you find that different why, your purpose, and then you get to see your gifts play out in a way that I never imagined could have. I thought I was just going to be, you know, stuck. So,
let's take a minute and go ahead and talk about that. It's what, Hold Fast Recovery?
Yeah. Yep.
Go ahead, plug it.
So, Hold Fast Recovery, we're a Christian substance abuse and trauma treatment center for civilians and first responders. We work with most major insurances. We provide scholarships for those who are in need when we can. And our main mission is to bring hope to those who are lost and find them a place to find healing. And sometimes people are in different parts of the country that reach out. So we try and find them, you know, what works for them, where they're at. You know, so much of treatment is so intense, and there's just a huge amount of pain that's going through that process. So we want to make sure we provide them a comfortable place to be able to heal, where they can open up and be vulnerable. Because as men, that's the last thing we want to do when we're broken. Like, I don't make me, you know, unbutton a button, please. And so we've just put together a team that's been able to serve those who are in need, and to show them and lead by example too. You know, I think that's the biggest piece is when I started seeing men and women who have been through traumatic experiences make it out, I wondered, how can I be like them? Like, what are they doing that I'm not doing? You know, and that was taking care of myself, going to therapy, and giving back. And so I started getting involved in nonprofits like Sons of the Flag, Carry the Load, 22 Kill, Wildland Firefighter Foundation, just really immersing myself and being a servant to others. And that's what I'm allowed to do at Holdfast. You know, and so now I get to go in there and talk with these men about my experience and tell them, and look them in the eyes, and not just have sympathy. Not that that's not important, not that there's no value in sympathy, but I can empathize. I can say I've been in those shoes. I've been called a junkie. I've had my mugshot on the front of the newspaper almost worldwide. I get what it's like.
That happened. So after the grant, they put your...
Someone did, yeah. They didn't. Nice. They came out and redacted it, and they apologized. And I get it. They're just trying. They were just trying to shed light, but it just wasn't the best timing. But anyways, I've been in those shoes. I've been on the other side of the cuffs. I've been on the other side of the ambulance, you know. And so to let them hear that and see that, and just express to them, it's okay to be here in this moment. This is right where you're supposed to be. Now open up. And let the healing begin. It starts here.
You know, you said that the girl that finally broke through to you was, I think her name was Carrie.
Yeah.
You said?
Yep.
And you, this morning you said you were like drinking 10 shots of whiskey and Coke.
Oh, yeah.
And she sat there and let you did it without judging you.
Yeah. She came from such a non-judgmental place that it allowed me to really open up and just feel comfortable. Obviously, the booze helped. But, I mean, she just knew what she was doing. She was a counselor. Her husband was in the fire service. She's worked with the fire service for many years. And she was just consistent and persistent. And so, like, when I'm telling other firefighters, what do I do, man? Do I go to school? Do I do this? I tell them, dude, go get your peer support training and just be consistent and persistent with those that you feel like need help. And at some point in time, they're going to open up. After you ask them enough, hey, how you doing, man? And they give you the facade, and you ask again how you're doing, and you ask again, they're going to open up. It's going to happen. Eventually, it's going to happen because they're going to see someone that cares, and they're going to realize, okay, this person has nothing to gain from me telling them what's haunting me other than helping me. Yeah. And that's what the brothers and sisters are here for. Yeah. That's the cultural shift we're fighting, is trying to say the stigma that we have around it is unacceptable, and there's men and women that are becoming leaders within the fire service and unions and nonprofits that are stepping up and saying, okay, enough's enough. Like, we have the resources. Now we just got to get them from that place of being broken to that resource, whatever it may be.
And it's a cultural change that we have to make. And that's not a change that I don't think we can make overnight.
I don't think so either, and I don't think we're doing a bad job at it at all.
No, I just think it's going to take time to get to where we need to be.
It's going to take time.
It's speakers like you, speakers like Devin, and you know the people that are working on the mental health, and just we have more information about it now. And I think the more we find out about it, the better we're going to be. Devin, I mean, you talk about you started a company called Purpose After Peril.
Yes,
and now that's getting. It's going to be a some Purpose After Peril / Sons of the Flag hybrid that's coming out. But, you know, and that's why I was so excited to finally meet you. I can feel sorry and I can be there and I can cry with somebody that's been burnt, but I have never walked in your shoes and I can't imagine. And you get to contact, and you did some counseling at the Burn Center in Colorado.
Yes.
So, correct. Once again, you have empathy. You've been there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What is your experience with that? Is it easier? I mean, it's kind of one of the things that Sons of the Flag we try to do. You try to meet match injuries.
Right, right. I think it works well for me. Speaking to other survivors, one big thing that we talk about is don't really compare stories, especially if somebody's fresh out of their injury.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter the extent of the injury. They're going to deal with it how they deal with it, and I'm going to deal with it how I deal with it. So really, I'm there just to support them, listen to their story. You know, if they would like to tell me, they can. If not, they don't have to. for me, it was very healing to see other burn survivors, you know, 10, 20 years out of their injuries, living full, healthy lives with little to no deficits. And if they do, they figured out a way around them. So just being able to be present and get in front of other survivors and say, don't put a limit on what you can do after your injury, mental or physical. Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit. You can work towards anything and get there. And, you know, Donut was talking about finding that purpose. You know, I've had that through family and the fire service, but Sons came to me at just the right time because I, you know, getting into the sobriety, I'm a year and a half sober now.
Hell yeah.
I mean, this is when I was very involved in the burn community after my injuries, but then I became very involved in becoming a firefighter because I want to be that top echelon of firefighter. I want to be the person you hope is showing up when your house is on fire. And I say that as a burn survivor, somebody that's been through that. Seconds count. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Seconds count. I kind of lost my train of thought there for a second. Where the hell was I going?
You're just talking about that purpose.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. That's what Sons of the Flag is. Jeez. I'm jet lagged. That's what it is. The Sons is that purpose for me to reconnect with the burn community again. I've established myself as a firefighter. I can continue growing. But now is my opportunity to start giving back to those that need it. And I'm so thankful that I met y'all and you're willing to bring me on board.
That I'm willing to exploit you?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's great that through tragedy, somehow we find ourselves right back at where we began, but with others.
Yes.
You know, and like you said, it was so important, and I tell so many people, and I'm sure you do too, Devin, like pain is pain. Like, oh, I couldn't imagine what it's like to lose 19. Oh, I couldn't imagine what it's like to burn 75% of my body. You know, what I'm dealing with is not as bad or not as much. And I remember, I just look at it, I'm like, fucking pain is pain, dude.
Yes.
And what you're feeling hurts. And don't let anyone ever minimalize that. Anybody. Because 19, 1, 343, it hurts. Mm-hmm. It hurts bad. And there's no way around it. But fortunately, I feel blessed that now I've got to come back and just listen. That's all I needed when Carrie sat down. Just someone to listen. Not tell me how to fix myself. Not tell me what I'm doing wrong. Just to listen and go, hey, do you want help? I'd love it. Took me effing 2 years to say, yeah, I'd like some help.
But how long of that time were you just numb going through? I mean, like you said, I know you needed to start dealing with it immediately, but because you said you were going to honor your brothers in a certain way, you put it off quite a while.
I put it off for probably 2-3 years. I waited till all the families were taken care of with their pensions and stuff. I waited till all the funerals, memorials were done, fundraisers, things like that. I figured I would just get to it when I got to it. And then by the time it came around to get to it, the first counselor I had seen just wrecked me. Just within the first 3 times of meeting with them, put such a bad taste in my mouth that I didn't come back to counseling for another year. And so it was hindsight's 2020, obviously. You know, if I could have started doing EMDR the day after the tragedy, who knows, right? But I'm glad for the journey I've been taking on today because it's given me all that experience and all those memories of places I don't want to go, and places I want to be, and where I've been with my family, in the fire service, in the community of enjoyment, and that pain was for nothing. You know, it wasn't for nothing. It was for everything that I have today.
It seems like whatever, you know, God seems to always have a purpose for us. We may not know it. We may not like it.
Yeah.
But you go through, and my mom used to always tell me, God will never put more on my plate than I can handle. Mm-hmm. Now, do I know I can handle it? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But, and that was going to be my next question. I mean, do you think, would you have been able to, if you, God forbid, anybody have to go through what you went through? But would that be the recommendation? Start counseling as soon as possible? Or like you said, they're going to do it on their own time.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, you know, for people who may be listening to this that are struggling is to reach out and find help. And statistically, we've seen that the sooner people start counseling, the better off they are. Now, that's at their readiness and that willingness to find that. And so it's really up to them. So the only thing I can say is I encourage you to do it sooner, so the less damage that's provided. Like, let me share my scars of, you know, getting in drunken fights, getting arrested, having issues, years of sleepless nights, just not weeks, but years of panic attacks and anxiety. Like, don't wait. Not because it's a pride thing, ego, whatever, but you're worth it. Like 110%, you're worth finding that healing from that injury, whatever it may be. And I'm sure you've got probably similar things, Devin, that it's like, don't take time just because it's not a physical wound, because these mental wounds are just as dangerous to us as any other.
You know, what you said, what Devin said, you know, we're all type A personalities. I believe you have to be a type A to be a firefighter. Most of us do. And we go all in on anything we do. And it seems like you were just trying, you went from burns, you went all in on getting burn recovered. Mm-hmm. You come back and then you go all in on firefighting. Mm-hmm. You get that. What's the next thing you go all in on?
Drinking.
Yeah, exactly.
No, family.
Yeah.
I mean, family's it. And I realize that I'm very fortunate to have the career that I do, but I'm one injury away from retirement. Yeah. And that's the reality of it. So if I let that dictate who I am, you know, I don't want to be the person that has to retire. And now all of a sudden I have no clue who I am. And I've missed the last 20 years of my child growing up and my wife and all those experiences.
Yeah.
You know, I got caught up really deep in destination happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, when I get here, I'm going to be happy. When I get here, I'm going to be happy. What I've realized is I'm happy now.
Yeah.
Like I am so fortunate to have what I have. And I really do live in the moment, because life is short and there's no guarantee you're making it to the next day. So do what you want to do, you know, love the people around you. That's the biggest thing. In the end, everything goes away, material goods, but the people that mean the most in our life, they're the ones that are always going to be there. So like you say, with loss, it doesn't matter if it's one or 343, mm-hmm. there's that pain associated. We don't want to go get help because we're just that kind of person. So we deal with that pain from the loss. Well, we're putting all of our family and friends through that same loss because they're losing us.
Yeah.
Because we won't go take care of ourselves. So mm-hmm. when you can look at it differently, that you're actually doing exactly to them what you're going through from your loss, that's where my perspective shifted.
That's probably the hardest pill to swallow. To say that everything I'm going through, I'm putting on my child.
Yes.
My spouse, my family, my friends. That was one of the biggest pills to swallow, because I thought if I didn't drink in front of my daughter, she wouldn't see it.
But she saw it.
You know, she seen the pain. We couldn't hide it. It was on my face. You know, but today, now, knowing my emotions the way I know them and getting in touch with that has allowed me by far to be an amazing father. Not the best, not perfect, but just more understanding of, okay, maybe it's deeper than my daughter just having a shit fit at 8 years old, mm-hmm. right? Maybe there's something deeper. Hey, how'd your day at school go? Well, you know, so-and-so didn't want to play with me because of this. Well, how did that make you feel? It made me feel alone and sad. Well, you're not alone, sweetie. Well, I felt alone. Okay. You know, and I come from a Christian home trying to raise my kids. And so I tell, you know, pray. There's always someone there that's going to love you. You know, and me being one of them, your mom, your stepmom, your brothers and sisters, your siblings. And most importantly, God.
Yes.
And so find strength and hope in that. And so, but the old me would have been like, go to your room, you know, time out, because she didn't know how to express her emotions. And I was doing the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. And it, it hurts when you realize that you've hurt the people you love the most because you're not willing to get help. And so get help.
Yes.
Not just for you, for your family, for your friends, for those who you protect and serve. We swore an oath. I hit the gym every day for 2 hours, but God forbid I talk to a counselor once a week or two. You know?
The stigma.
You know, God forbid I slow down on the drinking or quit this poison going into my body. Mm-hmm. You know, some have an issue with it, some don't. You know, it's really everyone's trauma and injuries are personalized to them. And, you know, it's an intricate level of care to get through that, but there's a common thread. Pain is pain.
And I think you bring up a good point is all of us, it took somebody to kind of slap us in the face to get us to recognize it. Even though it's your daughter and she's 8 years old, you just buddy checked her.
Yeah.
And I think we need to address that because I think that is exactly the push we need.
Absolutely. We did it today at Portland. Buddy check. It's not hard to do. You know, I'll do it with Donut. You know, I come up to Donut. I'm a friend of his. Hey, are you okay, brother? Yes, I'm good. You know, and actually knowing and having the relationship and knowing that he really is good. Okay, man, that's all I want. It's okay to check on people. And Sun's launch today, I think we handed out about 1,000 Buddy Check Challenge coins.
Yeah.
And so the idea is, you know, we all have guys at the station. We know everything about each other at the station. We know there are no secrets.
Yep.
There are no secrets.
Marital issues.
Yeah, the good. Alcohol, yep.
Whatever it is.
Yep. There are no secrets. So you know when a brother's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always tell my wife, you know, I'm so blessed because I actually have three families. Mm-hmm. I have my family at home, and I love them all dearly. I have my firefighter family, the guys I work at the station with, and I have my Sons of the Flag.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting the priorities right, but, and getting which families, you know, of course, the home family always thinks the firefighter family is more important. But, guys, if somebody couldn't do a hose evolution, you'd be out there working with them for hours. Okay. If somebody didn't know how to get the emergency shelter, how long would you work with a rookie? Getting him up to speed.
Yeah, until the time it took.
If they're having, yeah, until you're done. So yeah. Why don't we not do that when they're having problems at home? And it, like you said, you don't have to fix their problems. They just need you to listen to them.
Just be a catalyst.
Yes.
That's it. All we are is peer support. I love peer-to-peer. I think it's one of the best ways that one of the best things the fire service has implemented is that peer program. Because if we look at history and what time tells us, that's what heals. Sebastian Younger, the book Tribe, right? All the research he did into the war and different communities that were bombed versus weren't bombed. You know, what it said was that the people that were close-knit and the tightest community had the greatest amount of healing and happiness, even though they were still going through hell, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do it alone.
No.
And when you do it with someone else, you spread the weight to be carried.
Absolutely.
That's what we're here for. I'll carry you out of a building. I'll break my back doing it. And I will carry you through this mental pain as well.
We're going to do it together.
Yep.
We're going to be right beside. You know, it's like I said, and I don't know if there's anybody out there listening that is struggling. And, you know, Sons of the Flag, we are a burn foundation. But any of our task force leaders, me, anybody included, if you're having problems and you don't want to talk to anybody, call us. We'll get you in touch with the right people.
Yep.
We'll get you in touch with Donuts people. We'll get you the right, you know, I'm notorious for that. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I usually know the smartest guy in that room. You know, I know who, you know, may not have the answer for this, but I do know who does. And getting in touch with that and just putting people that need each other in the right groups. Yeah. Yeah. Getting people the help they need. And, guys, I can't thank you enough for spending time with me today. Real quick, Devin, how do we get a hold of you if we need you?
Devin at sonsoftheflag.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
I forget, you're Sons of the Flag now. Yeah. So that's the only one. Donut, you've got a movie out. You've got the Granite Mountain book. I read it on the way out here. Incredible book. Made me cry. Thank you for being so open. I mean, you have no hidden agenda. You tell it like it is.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
How do we get a hold of you if we need help with, if anybody needs help from Holdfast?
Yeah, you can call Holdfast at 1-800-351-6858. You can reach out to me on social media. My email address is brendan@holdfastrecovery.com. And, you know, there's so many other resources. There's Sons of the Flag. There's Next Wrong. There's nonprofits. There's suicide hotlines. I've called into them. You know, don't be afraid. Don't let fear cripple you. And just know that there is hope. There is a way out. And there are people that are willing to walk through that with you.
Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Sons of the Flag Radio, and we hope that you enjoyed this episode with our special guest, Brendan Donut McDonough. To listen to other episodes, then log on to Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio and YouTube by typing in Sons of the Flag. If you feel inclined to support Sons of the Flag or wish to join the team over at Sons of the Flag, then log on to www.sonsoftheflag.org and be sure to look us up on all social media by typing in @SonsOfTheFlag. As always, stay safe, stay passionate, and keep the mission first.